Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. From star player to manager. Hi friends, welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Rebecca, and today is November 5th. Today we have an article in management called Avoiding the Expert Identity Trap. Now before I go further, I'd like to invite my co-host Gabe to the program. Gabe, welcome.
Hey, thank you, Rebecca. Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it, Gabe. I always enjoy having you on the program. But let's get into our title first. So here we have Avoiding the Expert Identity Trap. Okay, let's talk about traps.
Sure. A trap is a place you can't escape.
Yes, yeah, and usually we think of, like, we trap animals, right? Like, mm-hmm. In the old days, like, perhaps, like, fur trappers would put a trap to trap an animal, like a raccoon, mm-hmm. or another animal so that they can get its fur. So the whole idea is you want the animal to maybe get their foot or something into the metal trap and they can't move. They can't get away.
Yeah, that's right. Here it's used in a more figurative sense, right? And, it kind of reminds me of, remember that old cartoon Aladdin by Disney?
Yes.
And they had that, you know, Aladdin and Princess Jasmine had that special little interaction where they both said at the same time they felt trapped.
They felt trapped.
She was a princess.
That's brilliant.
And she had this princess identity and she always had to live up to certain standards.
Right.
And she felt like she couldn't get away from that and just be herself sometimes and do some other things she wanted to do. And he was like the opposite, right? You know, just a street rat who had nothing. And so in a sense, he couldn't move up in life to do the other things that he wanted to do. And so they both felt trapped. And I think that's a little more similar to the way that the word is used in our lesson.
Yes. And then let's talk about identity. Wow. We could go on and on about identity for hours.
Mm-hmm.
So a brief explanation of a person's identity.
Yeah. It's who you are. That's your identity. And I think that everybody has a different definition of who they are depending on how they perceive themselves or how they want to be perceived by others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that all has to do with identity. Yeah, identity is a interesting thing because we all have a reputation and we all have a way that people perceive us. And sometimes we don't know all of those details necessarily. Or sometimes we act a certain way because we think that other people want us to act a certain way, which in a sense is not being true to yourself, right? And then in our lesson, we're going to be talking about what this writer calls the expert identity trap. Which, you know, when it comes to people who have a lot of skill and knowledge in a certain area, they're experts, they have a lot of expertise, and you can start to develop a certain identity around yourself that you feel like you always have to uphold no matter what.
Hmm.
In a sense, kind of like Princess Jasmine from Aladdin,
yes.
Right? Yeah, because of her identity, she felt like she couldn't do certain other things or she had to act in a certain way. And before reading the text of the lesson, that's the idea that the title gives me, is that, you know, if you're an expert in something, other people expect certain things from you, you expect certain things from yourself all the time, and that can be a trap.
Yes, that could be a trap. So today we're actually talking about someone who is moving on to a role as a manager. So before, perhaps they were a star employee. They were really, really good at what they did. So that's where they have their expert identity in their area of expertise. And expertise is just a noun form. Expertise just means the area that you are an expert in. In their area of expertise, now they have to move from being an expert to managing a team of people, and that's a big transition. Well, before we go on, Gabe, I'd like to ask, have you ever been in a situation where you felt you really weren't up to the task? You really were not up to something that you had to do?
For sure. You mean like being asked to do something and I felt like maybe I wasn't actually qualified to do it?
Mm.
Yeah, I think there have been many situations like that in my life. And I think it's because, you know, people perceive something about me that they think that I can do well. And perhaps I can do it well, right?
Right.
But I know that it takes a lot of energy and preparation to work up to that. And so, yeah, I totally understand that feeling though, not being able to do something that has been asked of me.
Yes, and that is a feeling we're going to talk about today. So let's get into our first reading where we're going to talk about the author feeling not up to the task at hand. So let's get into our first reading.
Avoiding the expert identity trap. How to make the player-to-coach transition seamlessly. Who am I to tell them how to make decisions? This anxiety-induced thought played like a broken record in my head as my first leadership training event approached in my new role as a training director. Talking in front of 40 leaders, most of whom were older than my ripe old age of 30 at the time, felt like the perfect opportunity for them to see right through my lack of expertise and expose me as the fraud I was.
So we start the article where the author has a new role. Gabe, what is her new role and how did she feel?
Yeah, this new role we're talking about, she was a training director, right?
Yes, that's a new role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she didn't feel qualified, I think partly because of her age. You know,
right.
And she's a little bit, we would say, sarcastic here when she's talking about her ripe old age of 30. And she's in a room of people who are 40 years old, or not 40, 40 leaders, and probably many of whom are a little bit older, right? Yeah, I would say she's being sarcastic when she says a ripe old age of 30. Usually we say ripe old age when someone really is a ripe old age, like our former boss, Doris Brome, passed away at a ripe old age of 98.
And yeah. 98, that's right. So here she's being sarcastic. And the feeling that she's having in the beginning here is, we read, this anxiety-induced thought. And anxiety just means you're anxious about something, you don't feel confident about it, you're actually just very worried.
Yeah, sure, you have stress,
you're
worry,
stressed.
Concern about something.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And this anxiety induced, what is induced?
Yeah, to induce means to cause a particular condition. Often it's kind of a physical condition. So this thought that she had made her have anxiety. So it's an anxiety induced thought.
Yes. And this thought just kept playing over and over in her head. She uses an idiom here we often use, mm-hmm. and that is a broken record.
Yeah, something that repeats again and again and again and again and again and again, kind of like I'm doing right now, you know. So it, a lot of people maybe don't know what a record is or haven't heard
you
a record.
You have to be over probably 35 or 40 to have ever seen a record.
Not necessarily, because they are coming back.
They are.
They have made a comeback in the last 10 years or so. And my brother has a vinyl record player. But the fact is it can sometimes skip. And so when it skips, it just starts to repeat. It doesn't continue playing the rest of the song or the rest of the recording. It just repeats the same couple second clip again and again and again and again, right? So
right.
That's a broken record. And so that's the thought that was going on in her head. It just kept going in her head over and over again.
Yes, and this thought went over and over in her head as she had to do this training event, and it just filled her with a lot of anxiety. And then it goes on to say, it felt like the perfect opportunity for them to see right through my lack of expertise and expose me as the fraud I was. So she was afraid that people would see that she lacked expertise in training And expose. To expose just means to bring to light,
mm-hmm.
or
yeah.
to bring something that people didn't know and it becomes public. Expose her as a fraud. What is a fraud?
Well, a fraud is bad. Fraud is a bad person. It's a bad behavior. Fraudulent behavior. That is behavior that deceives other people in some ways. And so she felt like a fraud because she wasn't used to this particular skill of training other people in the way that she was expected to do. And I would say, when I read this, another phrase came to mind, imposter syndrome.
Yes, I was hoping you'd mention it. Please explain. We use this a lot in psychology. What is imposter syndrome?
Yeah, that's right. In psychology, and basically it's the feeling that you are playing somebody that you're not. Or the feeling that you are being somebody that you are not actually deep down. And so people, when they try something new, or even something new in their field, but it's a different kind of skill they're trying to develop, often they will feel like, oh, this isn't me. I'm really not good at this. Oh no, I've never done this before. People are going to think I'm stupid and not, qualified for this. And those are all thoughts that people with imposter syndrome have, even though they are qualified. Of course, you always need to improve and work on your skills,
mm-hmm.
but you actually are qualified, but you might still feel like you're not.
Yes, I think many of us feel imposter syndrome at some point
in their
career.
And it's not a bad thing. It means you're trying new things.
Yeah, and it also means you're willing to improve yourself.
Yeah.
Because you think you're not good enough. But sometimes the voices in our head that we're not good enough, it can get overwhelming. And this is the state the author is in at the beginning of our article. Well, let's get into our next part, and then we'll see how she gets out of this thought of she's not good enough.
The sky parted. That first event was tough. Afterward, I admitted to my manager, who am I to tell them what to do? I've been a manager for about 5 minutes, and most of these leaders have been managers for 15 years. The question she posed to me next transformed my relationship with expertise for a lifetime. She asked, what if your job is not to be the expert up there, but to facilitate the expertise in the room? It was like the sky parted and the sun emerged. Because I had been promoted throughout my career due to my level of expertise, it was natural for me to assume that in my new role, expertise was the only way I could add value. Instead of being the expert, I had to rebrand myself as a leader who could facilitate, promote, and grow the surrounding expertise. Here are some common situations that can keep you stuck in the expert identity trap, and some strategies to avoid it.
So the first event she did was tough. That's understandable. Mm-hmm. And then she went to talk to her manager. And what did the manager say?
Yeah, well, first we need to see what she kind of confessed or admitted to her manager. And I have to say here, I think it's great when in a company you feel like you have the freedom and the ability to trust people with your feelings like this.
Yes.
Like she was with her manager, to be vulnerable like this and say, who am I to tell them what to do? I've been a manager for only about 5 minutes, right? And I like that question because it appears earlier in the lesson too. Who am I to do something, right? That people ask this question when they doubt their own abilities or their background or experience, and they doubt that they're qualified to do something or to tell others to do something. So who am I to tell them what to do? But you asked what her manager said, and she said something that kind of changed the writer's relationship with the idea of expertise for the rest of her life. She said it changed my relationship with expertise for a lifetime. And that is the question, what if your job is not to be the expert up there, but to facilitate the expertise in the room? So basically, don't focus on being the expert and knowing everything about your field, but you're there to kind of help facilitate what else is going on in the room and all of the other expertise that other people possess.
Yes, it's a huge shift. And this is a great word, facilitate. So to facilitate just means to make it easier for something to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So like, for example, Well, like a facilitator is someone, like when we talk about you go to an event and there's a facilitator, the facilitator is actually kind of just getting everyone talking.
Sure.
So the facilitator is actually not there to teach the people.
Yeah, not at all. I think of some MCs or hosts of events, and they're obviously their title is MC or host. It could be facilitator as well, but often their role will include facilitating stuff to make sure that the event runs smoothly. Yeah. So again, like you said, they're not the experts sharing all the important thoughts, but they're the ones maybe guiding the conversation or something like that. And I think if you're a part of a group or a club that meets regularly and there's an emphasis on discussion, the facilitator's job is really important, not to let someone talk too much.
That's right.
You know, and
that's
then also to try to get the ideas and thoughts of people who are maybe a little shy and don't talk as much. So facilitating is actually a pretty important skill in and of itself.
Yes, it's a very important skill. And that's really what managers do all the time, right? Mm-hmm. They're supposed to facilitate the team. They have to, like the team that they're leading, they need to facilitate and distribute the task in a way so that everyone can shine in what they're doing. Then she goes on to say, it was like the sky parted and the sun emerged. So it feels like maybe she had been feeling, her feelings were like very cloudy or it was like rainy, and now the sky parted and the sun came out because of her manager's answer. And she goes on to explain why she had this feeling of not being enough.
Yeah, and it's because of her past experience. She equated being promoted with having a certain level of expertise in something.
Yes.
And not with facilitating, right? Facilitating was kind of new to her. Training was kind of new to her, but she had been promoted because or due to her level of expertise. So it was natural for her to assume that in her new role, expertise, having the skill and the knowledge in that specific field was the only way that she could add value or contribute.
Yes. And then we go on to say, instead of being the expert, I had to rebrand myself as a leader who could facilitate, promote, and grow the surrounding expertise. Rebrand. We usually talk about brands, like for example, Coca-Cola is a brand, McDonald's is a brand, Studio Classroom is a brand. So what is rebranding?
Yeah, well, you could think of your brand as your reputation, and I think the best way I've heard of describing a brand is how other people perceive you and what other people say about you. And so rebranding is changing the way that other people think about you and your product and your service and your company. And, maybe changing the way that it is advertised as well and the way that you market yourself. And often we talk about rebranding companies or organizations, but as you can see in this lesson, people can rebrand themselves as well. It reminds me of that word to reinvent, really.
Yes, you can reinvent. Oh, what's the difference between rebrand and reinvent?
Yeah, they're similar. One is thinking more about your reputation, the way that other people perceive you, I think, is like, that's more like rebranding.
Right.
Right? And then reinventing yourself has to do with the act of getting there. Right. I think it's more like for me anyway, that would be like more like the process of getting to that new identity, that new perception, that you want.
You're changing what you do or how people perceive you. So it's part of the process. It's rebranding. Okay. So she wanted to rebrand herself as a leader who could facilitate and then promote and grow the surrounding expertise. So this is really what managers do, right? They're supposed to help the people that they lead grow.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it mentions the surrounding expertise. That's talking about all of the other expertise that is represented by those other individuals that are around you. And yeah, I totally agree. That's a manager's job. A good manager will do that well.
Yes, but I find that a lot of people don't seem to do that very well. Because, I mean, there's a whole kind of managing, like we often talk about and read about micromanaging.
Sure.
So micromanaging means the manager wants to know every single detail because they don't trust their people to be able to do it on their own.
Yeah.
So that's a case where we're very reliant on the manager, and then the people on their team are just taking instructions.
Sure. Or maybe another you know, problem might be that the manager doesn't know how to put people where they will shine the most.
Yes.
And often that's a matter of, you know, time and discovering who everybody is and working with them. And you could find out, you know, where they're going to work best. But that could be very frustrating if you're working for a company that you believe in, but then maybe you're not doing the things that you're actually really gifted at or will excel at.
Yes. Yeah. That is another part of managing well, is putting people in their right place. And most of the time, managers will talk the talk, as we say. They will say, oh, we want everyone to be in the right role. But to actually recognize people's skills and talents and put them in the right role is actually a lot harder than we think.
Yeah.
Because first of all, you have to be able to recognize talent. And I have to say, not every manager is good at recognizing talent.
Yeah. It takes practice.
It takes practice. And some people are just better at it than others.
Mm-hmm.
They're able to see things much quicker. But let's get back into this expert identity trap. And we will give three tips on some ways that you could avoid being stuck in the expert identity trap. Let's get into our next reading where we'll talk about the first strategy to avoid the trap.
The guilt trap. Moving into a new leadership role can sometimes unsettle colleagues accustomed to our old ways of working. They may, intentionally or not, attempt to elicit guilt, saying things like, "You used to do this for me," or "People are going to be upset about this change." While these concerns may be valid, your role is to redirect any resistance toward productive outcomes. A helpful response might be, "That's true, and moving forward, my focus is on working on this strategic project development for my team."
So what is the first tip?
Right. Well, the first trap here, right, is the guilt trap. And that is the idea that you might feel a lot of guilt for stepping into something you're not used to doing. And it could be because of your own original feelings, or it could also be because of the way that other people make you feel.
Yes. And here it goes on to say that sometimes when you move into a leadership role, it can unsettle colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
So to unsettle just means make someone uncomfortable or worried or nervous, accustomed to our old ways of working. And I think this is especially true if you had been working with other people, you have been their peer, you're their equal. And now perhaps you got a promotion, so now you're managing those people, you're no longer at the same level as them.
Right.
And it's hard for the colleagues because they're used to you being the old you.
Yeah, right. And you're still the same you, but now you have different responsibilities and a different working relationship with each other. And so it can, I imagine it can be awkward at first.
Yes.
You know, when this happens. And so I think everyone has to adjust with grace, try to adjust with understanding. And, you know, and it says they may intentionally or not attempt to elicit guilt. And elicit means to get information or maybe get a reaction from something or somebody to try to draw it out of them. And so they try to make you feel guilty saying things like, "Oh, you used to do this for me." And maybe as a peer, that was okay as a colleague. But then now as a manager, you're not able to do those same things. And they might make you feel like, "Oh, now you think you're better than me." You know, those kind of comments can, or thoughts, you know, can kind of make people feel guilty.
Right. I really think at work, we always have to think that you don't need to be your colleague's best friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially if you're the manager. A manager doesn't need to be their subordinate's best friend.
Right.
But sometimes it's hard because if you're friends, sometimes we have the emotional aspect that makes us like want to be kind and friendly. But sometimes you have to remember your first role is a leader. Your second role is a friend, and it's more important to be a leader than a friend. And I think that the same thing goes with parenting, right? A parent's main job is not to be their child's friend. You know, like you need to lead your children. You're not there to be their best friend.
Yeah.
You know, and that's sometimes hard to, when you're changing roles, it's not very easy. And then when these concerns happen, like when you get into this new role, what does the author say we can do?
You have to do the responsible thing and just do what's best for the company, right? Regardless of any emotions you may feel, you have to redirect any resistance toward productive outcomes, because that's the whole point of working in a company, is to be productive and, you know, produce the things and services that you're supposed to do. And so a helpful response might be, and this is just a suggestion from our writer, that's true, and moving forward, my focus is on working on this strategic project development for my team. So to kind of try to remove the emotions from the situation and get back to the task at hand.
That's true. So you have to let people know that that was before and now is now. Things
right.
have changed, and you need to be consistent and firm about this. You can't waver. To waver just means you're unsure, you're unsteady, kind of like you just move from side to side. No, you cannot waver. You need to stand firm and just keep repeating this line. That was then, and now is now.
Yeah, I imagine it's difficult, especially maybe for employees who came into the company at around the same time. They were both new at the same time. They became friends because they were both new, and then all of a sudden one of them is promoted to manager while the other one keeps the same position. You know, that can't be always easy to navigate.
Right. That's
right.
Not always easy, but we have to do the best of the situation we're in.
Mm-hmm.
Like whether you're the person being promoted or you're the person who didn't get promoted.
Yeah. And I think that if you really do value the friendship aspect of your relationship, because you may actually be friends, you know, if you do value that, you still have to figure out ways to communicate that to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. And often, I mean, I personally think that, like, you know, a lot of that should maybe take place outside of work anyway. But yeah, there's still ways to communicate that you value someone's friendship, even though you may be their manager now.
Right. That's right. Well, friends, that brings us to the end of today's program. Definitely come back tomorrow. We have two more strategies to help you avoid the expert trap. And I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Gabe.
Saying bye-bye.
Bye-bye.